So this gospel story is only 4 verses. It's only 4 verses. But it gives me so many feelings. My heart aches with Martha and her little passive aggressive heart. It probably comes as no surprise that I resonate with her perspective, the busyness, the doing, the frustration that her reality is not shared or supported by her sister. Our Bible study crew mused that Martha for sure was the oldest in her family, overly responsible, managing the house, preparing the meal for everyone else. Meanwhile, her sister just sits there. And the nerve of Jesus to say, Mary has picked wisely. At some point, everyone's going to be hungry, and thanks to Martha, food will be ready. The mental load, right? Maybe you've read that Atlantic article or seen the buzz around it. The idea that caregivers in most relationships hold on to all the logistics behind making life happen. And this burns people out. The appointment making, the meal planning, the cleaning, the care. Perhaps even a little bit of FOMO, fear of missing out, while you are the multitasking robot keeping all those plates spinning. I don't blame Martha in our bulletin picture for today. I don't blame her for reaching out to Mary for help. I so wish Jesus would have taken her side. And he doesn't. But perhaps it's not as simple as Martha versus Mary, as works versus faith, right versus wrong. The story right before this one is the story of the Good Samaritan. That's the story we read last Sunday, where we were all invited to consider everyone as our neighbors and to be on the ready to hop to help when we see a need arise. So it's no accident that this story is the next story, where we get this comparison, where another aspect of discipleship is lifted up. The things that distract Martha, the many tasks, the Greek here is diakonia, which means acts of service. And diakonia is still lifted up as a landmark piece of being a person of faith, to the point in our denomination, the ELCA, we have lifted up leaders as deacons who see this as their calling in life. Pastors are called to word and sacrament. Deacons are called to word and service. Diakonia. And this was the exact thing that Martha was doing that day in her home for Jesus and the disciples. When Martha gets to her boiling point, she asks Jesus, "Don't you care that my sister has left me to do all this work by myself? Tell her to help me." And Jesus responds, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things, but few things are needed, indeed only one. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." The Greek here for better part could also be translated as good portion or useful share. Jesus is not offering a value judgment between them, but he assuages Martha's worry by affirming that Mary too is doing a good portion of the work. Mary is sitting at Jesus's feet, which would have been a place reserved for men only. So Jesus' response here is radical because he affirms that she has chosen a good portion of the work, even though she's not where she is expected to be. No one can take that away from her. Jesus protects her rights to be in the position of disciple. This text names some beautiful things about power dynamics. Women are disciples. And there's an important value in the life of faith to doing service and also learning, works and faith. If you look at that bulletin picture once again, you see how Jesus in this picture both places a hand on Mary's shoulder, supporting where she is sitting, and also buoys Martha's arm. Jesus' response is not downplaying Martha's ministry of hospitality. It's actually all about her preoccupation with Mary, which is something I never considered until this week, reading the Sanctified Art resources. Jesus' response is not about Martha's ministry of hospitality. It's about her preoccupation with what Mary is doing or not doing. It's the pain and dissonance in between the sisters' relationship. It's the space. It's the things left unsaid. It's the things said sideways. In January, we had this panel of local Lutheran churches who have already adopted a welcome statement. And they shared their experiences around this work and why it matters. And one of the panelists shared the importance for her around the word reconciliation. She noted that the word isn't actually reconciliation, but it's reconciling. It's active. She said the church has a responsibility to own up to the harm that it has and continues to perpetuate. And this work of reconciliation, reconciling, it's ongoing. This work of welcome, even when we do pass a welcome statement, it's a moving target. It's something that we are called to think about again and again and again as people of faith. Shane Claiborne, nonviolence peace activist and Christian, has shared this really sobering statistic. When Americans were asked cold turkey to say what words pop into their head when they hear the word Christian, the top three answers are judgmental, hypocritical, and anti-gay. Ouch. Sadly, this is what we are known for in the wider community. And so the gospel invites us to engage in this, to lean into this as a living relationship, to be in the work of reconciling, to bridge the gap, to sit in this space in between things, and have face-to-face conversations. To not talk to Jesus about our issues with one another, but to engage with one another. To stop judging what people are doing or not doing, and to simply see each other as God sees us, beloved. And we are all just doing our best. And dear ones, woof, this is hard. But it's not impossible. Clear communication is such an important part of being in relationship with one another. Notice in this gospel text, Jesus doesn't lean into the passive-aggressive triangle that Martha tries to create. He simply says it's up to the estranged people, Martha and Mary, to do that work, to make the matter right. He opens up the possibility for reconciliation between the sisters, knowing that each of them have important gifts to be shared. And so as we think about this work of reconciling, what does it mean to be at peace with one another? I look to saints and sinners who are wiser than me. And so this is the second week in a row that I'm going to quote Padraic O'Tooma. And so challenge me. Find some other people to read, Pastor CJ. But I couldn't think of anyone better, for Padraic O'Tooma is from Northern Ireland. And he has spent his life work meeting people in the middle. Meeting people in the middle. And he himself is a gay man who was abused by the Catholic Church. And so he wrote this prayer about reconciliation that I want to read. But before I get to that, you have some work to do of your own. There is a blank page in your bulletin today, page 25, and there are pens and pencils in the pews. And I'm gonna take 2 minutes of silence, which is a long time for Lutherans, I know. 2 minutes of silence. And I want you to be a little bit like Mary, rest, reflect. Think about someone in your life that you need to be in this work about reconciling with. Who is someone you say passive-aggressive jibes about? Who Who are you frustrated with? Maybe those statistics about who we are as church, maybe you feel like you need to write a letter to the LGBTQIA community. Who is someone you need to be at peace with this morning? And I invite you to spend a little time reflecting on that. You can use this paper as confession. You can write a letter. You can write a prayer. And I'll come back in 2 minutes. Receive this blessing, this prayer. Oh God, where there is separation, there is pain. And where there is pain, there is a story. And where there is story, there is understanding and misunderstanding, listening and not listening. May we, separated peoples, estranged strangers, unfriended families, divided communities, turn toward each other and turn toward our stories. With understanding and listening, with argument and acceptance, with challenge, change, and consolation. Because if God is to be found, God will be found in this space in between. Amen. Thanks be to God.